The opponents keep attacking. The Pope can't control these Catholics who want to attack Luther, and Luther talks back. Luther becomes one of the great back talkers of all time. In this breathing spell of 2 or 3 years, 2.5 years really, that is created by Frederick's delaying tactics, Luther writes, and he writes, and he writes, and he does not shut up. He does not keep quiet. So in 1519, 1520, the first part of 1521, Luther has this breathing space, and he outwrites his opponents. That's the simplest way to put it. He writes more, he writes better. He creates a small library of Reformation writings in these years. His output is vast. Lots of little books, often very pungent, powerfully expressed, written, even Luther's Latin is simple and direct in a way that the Latin of his opponents isn't, you know, kind of, his opponents are mostly professors. They write like professors, long-winded technical jargon. Luther writes like a really good preacher, both in Latin and in German. And of course, he's actually proud of this. He says, I teach my opponents how to speak German, because he writes a German that is really impressive, powerful, provocative, vibrant, and in a very simple and direct way explains the issues in a way that any ordinary townsman in Germany can understand. Verbally, he's just very powerful. And the power of it is enhanced all the more by this rather recent invention, the printing press. We have to remember, Gutenberg's Bible was printed in the 1470s, less than 50 years before the time that Luther's writing. So the church has never had this experience of trying to suppress a heretic who is so eloquent, who writes so much, whose words disseminate throughout Germany before you know it, because of the printing press. And because of the press, Luther's words are everywhere. Everyone can read them or have them read to them. Even if they're illiterate, they can at least hear it in German. Very powerful. The culmination of this astonishing productivity of Luther as a writer comes in the year 1520, a really good year for Luther as a writer. He writes the Treatise on Good Works, which we've mentioned before. He writes The Freedom of a Christian, which we spent 2 lectures discussing, a magnificent brief book. All of Luther's books are brief. He doesn't write long books. He just writes a lot of them. He writes a book called The Babylonian Captivity of the Church, which we'll talk about in the next lecture. And he writes an address to the Christian nobility, which we'll talk about this lecture. But first, let me say one more thing about the politics, because in 1520 also, another thing happens, the battle with the papacy does resume. The emperor gets elected, Charles V, and the pope comes down hard on Luther in no uncertain terms. He writes a bull. I have to mention this. A bull means comes from a Latin word meaning an embossing. Right? So the papal decrees are embossed with a special bullum in Latin, and that's why it's called a bull. So the pope publishes a bull, which begins, Arise, O Lord, and judge thy cause. A wild boar from the forest has invaded your vineyard, that is, the church, and seeks to destroy it. All right, so Luther's an enemy of the church. The bull includes a list of 41 teachings of Luther that are condemned for all time as heretical. The writings are to be burned, and no Christian ought to read them or defend them. And it cites and invites Martin to Rome with safe conduct to have a friendly discussion with the Pope. The bull doesn't say he'll get burned, but that's what everyone's expecting. The bull is published in June. It reaches Luther in Wittenberg in October. And in December of 1520, he takes it outside the city and he burns it. That's when the public break with Rome becomes irrevocable. When he defends it, he once again comes back to that quote from canon law that the Pope's theologian Priorius had brought to his attention. If the Pope were so scandalously bad that he led multitudes of souls to the devil, he still could not be removed from office, says the canon law. Well, Luther brings it up again when he's defending his bonfire. He says, what devilish unchristian thing would they not undertake if they shamelessly hold and teach such frightful things? See there, Christian, what canon law teaches you. And then he drops the canon law into the fire, along with books of scholastic philosophy, decretals of the Pope, and the bull of the Pope. His hand trembles a bit as he holds it over the fire, because now the break is irrevocable. It's not just in his heart, it's a public break. He's committed now to having a church that is different from the Pope's church. Right? If you want to find the true church, you're not going to find it in Rome. This is a different church now. The true church of Christ is not the Pope's church.